Now, as drugs move north into the United States, guns move south into Mexico. About 70% of guns confiscated in Mexico between 2014 and 2018 and then submitted for tracing were found to be made or sold in the U.S. It's according to a Government Accountability Office report. That number doesn't include all firearms in Mexico. Our next guest is a journalist who's been writing about Latin America for two decades. His latest book digs into the world of the illegal firearms trade and how that market fuels violence in U.S. cities and in Latin America. He talked to undercover ATF agents, members of gangs in the U.S. and Mexico, legal arms manufacturers, and illegal weapons traffickers. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about the world of illegal gun trafficking? Do you have questions about drug violence in Central America and its connection to the flow of guns in the U.S.? Do you think laws need to change? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Yoan Grillo is a journalist and the author of the new book, Blood, Gun, Money, How America Arms Gangs and Cartels. Yoan, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be here.
I gave just one statistic there. Yoan, can you talk more about the impact that guns that move from the U.S. south have in places like Mexico and further south in Central America?
Yeah, well, it's huge here. I've been covering the violence here for 20 years and seen things really fall apart. And the issue of guns flowing south is massive and has been for some time, as well as, you know, you've seen numbers of traced in the last 12 years, definitively traced 164,000 firearms taken from criminals, including the most violent cartels, and traced to shops and factories in the United States. But that's only the guns they're seized. They are estimates that the real number is above 200,000 guns being trafficked south every year, over 2 million in a decade. Now, the type of guns we're seeing is particularly AR-15s, AK-47 type rifles, often that are sold semi-automatic in the United States and converted in Mexico to fully automatic, but also weapons like Barrett 50s, and we've seen those being used in fights against the Mexican military, against the Mexican police. And here, really, what I would describe as a mix, a hybrid of crime and war, a real falling apart of the country. So a real substantial impact.
Now, the focus of your book is really on this line between a product that is made legally, it's made in factories that are regulated, it's sold in many cases legally, and then how those products find their way into this network of illegal trafficking. And part of what you found was that a lot of people haven't done the work to find out how this is happening. How much coming into this did you realize we just don't know how this happens?
Well, it was interesting. I've been covering drug trafficking for many years, and there's been a lot written about drug trafficking and about drugs and the, you know, drug trade. But the illegal gun trade, I think, is understudied. So a lot of the research, which I thought hadn't been done, in talking to gun sellers in the United States, in cities like Baltimore, people who are trafficking guns in illegally from southern states, gun traffickers in prison in Mexico, and all kinds of people in this industry. And what I found was you have the biggest legal firearms retail market in the world, in the United States, bigger than the next 25 countries combined. But you also have this parallel black market in firearms. And so you see that most murders are committed in the United States by people who have acquired their guns illegally, and in Latin America as well, in fact, of people who have acquired guns illegally from the United States. And I looked at the ways they cross from the legal to the black market, like an invisible line. And you see things like straw buying, where people who are paid money, who have clean records, to go into a shop and buy guns. And it was amazing how this is being done. And we're seeing things like single sales of people buying 85 guns, people going in and buying 10 identical AK-47s, supposed housewives buying several Barrett 50s in cash. So I see a lot of kind of low-hanging fruit, which is not done in terms of enforcement on this issue.
Right. Let's stick with straw buying for a moment. If I'm that straw buyer, somebody hands me a lot of cash. Some of it I get to keep. Some goes toward buying the guns. I am not at a huge risk of getting into trouble if I'm that straw buyer. Can you talk about the consequences?
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting that I discovered that there isn't a federal firearms trafficking law in the United States. So there's a bunch of these smaller laws. It's very different than going after drugs, where you have this very, very strong conspiracy laws to go after drug traffickers. Whereas with guns, you have these smaller laws, and one of them is lying on the form. So basically, if you go in the shop, somebody says, here's some money, go and buy the gun, go to the shop, and the crime is lying on the form, and the recommended punishment is probation. Now, it can be up to 10 years by the books, but the recommended punishment is probation. So most people are only getting probation. Even in one case I looked at where a person walked in, bought 10 AK-47s for a cartel affiliate. One of those guns was used in the murder of an American agent in Mexico, an ICE agent, and he still only got probation. So you see how these sentences are very low, or punishments are very low for this crime, and there's very little deterrent, which then brings the gun police, the agent, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives into these very, very dubious operations like Fast and Furious, where they followed guns going to Mexico to try and build a bigger case, and it really blew up in their faces.
Another network you saw was, as you mentioned, part of this story is guns, part of it's drugs. You talked to a couple different people who were dealing illegal guns by trading illegal drugs for them. It's a fine way to make a profit. I can get these drugs cheaper. You can get these guns cheaper. Can you talk about how you found that works when you talked to the people actually making these transactions?
Yeah, sure. So I talked to somebody who was been convicted in New England area. He'd been in a prison gang called the Dirty White Boys, and he was picking up guns around rural New England towns, going to the city outside of Boston and trading them, in his case, with Dominican gang members for drugs. Now, you have these very, very elastic prices you see in these black market trades. So a gun in some small town in rural New England might not be seen as a high value or high worth. It's worth a lot more to these gangsters. Meanwhile, the drugs they're getting much cheaper over in New York, and they're worth much higher. So you see these prices going up very high. He was also having a sideline of buying bullets in Walmarts and then taking them and selling them for a dollar a round for these bullets. So he was making a lot of money, but only spending a lot of those money on drugs. And you see that's on a kind of low level. You see the same thing on a high level when you look at things like in Colombia. You have the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, who are a guerrilla group classified as a terrorist group by the United States, been involved in various bombings and so forth. And you see them on a very large level receiving these guns, some of them which in fact are coming from the United States in these networks and trading them for high amounts, high kilos of cocaine. So you see these interactions, this bartering between drugs and guns are all chains of these criminal networks.
We're talking to Johan Grillo about his new book, Blood, Gun, Money, How America Arms Gangs and Cartels. He follows networks of illegal gun trafficking into American cities and into Mexico and Central America. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about illegal gun trafficking within the U.S. and across the border into Mexico and beyond? Do you think changes are needed in U.S. laws or enforcement? We'll talk about that some. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with journalist Johan Grillo about his new book, Blood, Gun, Money, How America Arms Gangs and Cartels. He follows what he and others call the Iron River of illegal gun trafficking into American cities and across the border into Mexico and beyond. You could join in if you have a question at 800-642-1234. Johan, one thing that strikes me in the book is that there's a lot of parallels, as you write about, between the guns that go into, say, Baltimore, where you spent a lot of time, into criminal hands there, and into Mexico and into Central America. Are there policy changes, given how tough it can be to change gun laws, are there policy changes that you think are doable that would actually put a dent into that flow?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we see actually quite low-hanging fruit in this. I mean, one thing we discussed, straw buyers. Mm-hmm. If there's no deterrent, you know, you're not going to get any jail time, you're only going to get probation. And that's why they're paid off on very little money to go and buy guns for cartels, for gangs, often only pay things like $50 for a handgun, $100 for a rifle, and these kind of sums. So simply giving, enforcing that with the, you know, the law, you can legally give people jail time, could really be a game changer on this. And when you saw circumstances like the Columbine massacre, when there was some illegal gun buying involved there, and there was jail sentences handed out there because there was families and they wanted accountability. But we often don't see that, I think, for when these large amount of murders, including of children and like stray bullets in the inner cities of the United States and in Mexico. Another thing is the universal background checks. I mean, I've looked at gun trafficking to Mexico, and there's one particular trafficker I interviewed in the prison in Ciudad Juarez, and he had a method of going to gun shows and buying large amounts of AR-15s with no paperwork at all and driving them back to Mexico. And I saw this in a gun show in Dallas as well, people doing this, offering brand new AR-15s with no paperwork, and saw cases that the ATF had a record where they saw people doing this. Now, it is abusing the law. Supposedly, if you're only a collector selling with no paperwork, you shouldn't be selling new weapons. But people are doing this. So you have this, you know, idea of universal background check, supported in one survey by 89% of Americans, 81% of conservatives. And that's on the table now, and that could happen. And these could have a big impact on this situation.
Let's bring on a caller now. Jim is with us in Erin. Jim, hi.
Hi there. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I would like to know how your guest feels about the border walls between Mexico and the U.S. Do they slow traffic? Do they stop traffic? Are they a good idea? I'm just really interested in his point of view.
Jim, thanks for the call. We often think about walls preventing people from moving south to north. Is that something that could help the flow of guns from north to south, Johan?
I don't think it has an impact on the flow of guns from north to south, because most are just driving through what they call the ports of entry, the regular roads. Now, one of the reasons is you have a very high amount of traffic going over the border. So you have hundreds of thousands of vehicles going over, and very few are actually searched. If you drive in a car into Mexico, you might be surprised how easy it is. Now, it also, the walls don't really stop the large volumes of drugs and the high value drugs going to the United States, meaning heroin, cocaine, crystal meth, and fentanyl. The reason being is most of those drugs also are going through these regular ports of entry, as they're called, hidden in cars, in what they call trap cars with secret compartments. People don't really want to risk going over the, walking over the desert or floating over the river with large amounts of heroin, which is worth a lot of money. So they take it in these cars. And the reality is that in a city like Nuevo Laredo, where you have about 15,000 trucks crossing every day, only very few are searched. So the border wall's main impact is hitting some of the undocumented migrants going over, but also it doesn't really stop. It kind of changes the routes. One of the biggest corridors now for undocumented migrants, which the cartels are also involved now, they control basically undocumented migrants and they'll charge them money. One of the biggest routes is going over the Rio Grande estuary, where it's impossible to build a wall there. And another is a lot of them going in tunnels or finding places in the desert, in the mountains, where the wall does not go through. So it doesn't really have a major impact. It has a kind of more of a psychological impact, perhaps, and stops some of the easier routes of walking into the United States.
Jim, thanks for that call. And that reminds me, Johan, you connect the dots here. We know that we've got a lot of people showing up at the southern border coming from the few countries to the south of Mexico. And they're being driven out by gangs armed with, in many cases, the guns you're talking about. Can you connect the dots for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the largest number of migrants or refugees, or it's a mix of things really arriving at the southern border, is from Honduras, which I look into closely. I've been covering Honduras for many years, and you've seen a real meltdown of that country, particularly with gang violence. And some of the people I talked to on that trail, I mean, one woman who would be injured by a stray bullet and she was being physically carried by her husband and a friend along the road. Another guy who'd been shot in both legs, who was a builder and had gone to work on a building site, a construction site in a rival gang neighborhood. So again, what you see is this kind of weird hybrid of crime and war in these countries, fueled or at least the gangs, the cartels are using the guns they're acquiring from the United States. And it's creating very unstable situations. Now, there's a central paradox here, I think, in this story, and that is the United States, whereas it has a lot of guns, it still does have quite strong institutions and despite a lot of criticism, strong policing in the United States against certain organized crime. Whereas in Latin America, institutions are much weaker and crime really overwhelms the institutions on this side of the border.
In just our last couple of minutes, Johan, I want to talk about tracking crime guns, something that might surprise a lot of people. When a police department or when a Mexican law enforcement agency calls the ATF, they can't search a database to look up guns. What do they have to do in just our last minute and a half?
Yeah. So I went to the National Trace Center in West Virginia. It's surprising you see these mountains of papers when you go in, which are old records from gun shops. It's illegal to have a digital database of firearms. A lot of cops don't know that. So what they have to do is they have to call up the gun manufacturer and then ask them which wholesaler they sold to, follow the chain. The average time, and this is if you find literally a smoking gun at a crime scene and you call up for a trace, the average time is 11 days, which is quite a lot in a murder investigation. So another one of the many interesting things I discovered looking into the world of firearms and crime guns and firearms trafficking.
Just a half minute or so left. Johan, do you see an appetite to tackle the problem of the illegal flow of illegal firearms?
I see a big window of opportunity now. This issue, you know, is coming up now. There is some discussion about changing this from all kinds of angles. So that's on the positive side. On the negative side, I think politics is quite broken. People are very polarized. And I think this issue, the best way is to kind of find common ground. I don't think about taking away people's Second Amendment rights. It's about having law enforcement and stopping the firearms going to the violent criminals who are causing so much death. And I think most people can agree that's a good thing to do. You have to try and stop these guns going to reduce the bloodshed, which causes so many problems in so many places.
Johan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, all. Great to be here.
That's Johan Grillo, a journalist. We've been talking about his latest book. It's called Blood, Gun, Money: How America Arms Gangs and Cartels.